Heute zu Gast der Gründer und CEO von Peloton, John Foley.
You pay Netflix every month to get access to their content. You pay Spotify every month to get access to their content. And you pay Peloton every month to get access to our content. Our churn, I believe, is lower than both of those companies because of the hardware element where you bought in. But yeah, we would consider ourselves much more like Spotify and Netflix. Let's go! Go! Herzlich
willkommen beim OMR Podcast.
Regelmäßige Hörer dieses Podcasts wissen, es läuft gerade ein Börsenspiel, bei dem die Stammgäste dieses Podcasts Geld anlegen, unter anderem auch, um auf die Börse hinzuweisen, als ein Ort, an dem man seine finanzielle Zukunft auch ein bisschen absichern kann. Und ein ähnliches Anliegen hat Visual West, eine Tochter der Union Investment aus Frankfurt. Da sitzt ein Team aus Finanzprofis und Digitalexperten und hat sich was Neues ausgedacht, nämlich eine Sparplanlösung, die man digital verfolgen kann. Man zahlt da 25 Euro im Monat ein zum Beispiel und kann dann ganz entspannt fürs Alter sparen oder mal für eine Weltreise, für ein Eigenheim. Man kann da auch natürlich nachhaltig investieren, wenn man das gerne möchte, also Gutes tun über das Investment. Es gibt auf Sparbüchern einfach keine Zinsen mehr, so gut wie keine Zinsen mehr. Deswegen denkt bitte an sowas. Visual West setzt insbesondere auf ein Portfolio aus ETFs. Ich glaube, das sagen alle, die sich damit auskennen. Das macht total viel Sinn. Schaut am besten mal tiefer rein. Das ist, wenn ihr jetzt sagt, okay, der Westermann redet immer so viel von Finanzanlage, ich verstehe es immer noch nicht im Detail. Ich habe zumindest jetzt noch einen Gutschein über 50 Euro, den man bei allen möglichen Online-Shops einlösen kann. Man bekommt also 50 Euro Cash mehr oder weniger, wenn man sich einmal registriert unter visualwest.de/OMR und dort den Code OMR entsprechend eingibt. Also alle weiteren Infos dazu und natürlich auch zu Chancen und Risiken der Geldanlage unter visualwest.de/OMR und in den Shownotes und bei uns unter dem Artikel zu diesem Podcast. Hinweis auf eine der erfolgreichsten deutschen Digitalfirmen aller Zeiten. 2005 in Göppingen im Schwabenland gegründet, mittlerweile 8 Milliarden wert, börsennotiert, weltweit im Einsatz. Die Rede ist von TeamViewer. Wahrscheinlich kennen einige von euch TeamViewer als Fernwartungstool, wo man damals schon so aus dem Homeoffice auf IT-Systeme zugreifen konnte, gucken konnte, was läuft falsch. Das geht auch heute noch. Und zwar auch heute noch im kleinen Anwendungsfall Familie oder Freunde, die sich verbinden über TeamViewer bis hin zur Enterprise-Lösung für IT-Support in Großkonzernen. Alles läuft über TeamViewer. Und es gibt natürlich eine ganze Reihe von verschiedenen Teilprodukten. Unter anderem gibt es TeamViewer Web Monitoring. Da geht es darum zu schauen, ob die eigene Seite oder die eigenen Seiten weltweit stabil sind, ob die überall gleich schnell lädt, ob irgendwo vielleicht Probleme vorliegen mit Checkout oder Kunden-Logins. All das will man ja monitoren. Sowas bietet halt TeamViewer auch an. Außerdem gibt es jetzt von TeamViewer ein kostenloses White Paper über Webmonitoring und zwar teamviewer.com/OMR. Da gibt es das White Paper. Wer das TeamViewer Webmonitoring mal ausprobieren möchte für 14 Tage kostenlos, der kann das machen und bekommt darauf auch noch 20% Rabatt von uns mit dem Code OMR20. Also denkt an TeamViewer, wenn es um Fernwartung jeglicher Form geht und wenn es auch um Webmonitoring geht. Der John Foley wäre zu Gast gewesen im Mai beim OMR-Festival, aber die Dinge haben sich ja anders entwickelt und der John Foley wird darüber gar nicht so traurig sein, denn Peloton hat in den letzten Monaten seinen Wert massiv gesteigert, ist jetzt 30 Milliarden wert, also fast Faktor 3 zu Anfang des Jahres. Ganz viele Menschen haben Bock, so ein Fitnessbike bei sich zu Hause zu haben und natürlich dann auch ein Abo abzuschließen, wo sie dann permanent trainieren können, teilnehmen können an so virtuellen Kursen. Peloton gilt so ein bisschen als das Apple der Fitnessbranche. Aber der John sagt auch, am Ende sind wir gar keine Hardwarefirma, wir sind auch gar keine Fitnessfirma, wir sind ein Medienunternehmen. Und das liegt natürlich an dem Content, den die ganzen Instructor erzeugen, also an den Kursen. Da gibt es einige Instructor, die haben Hunderttausende von Instagram-Followern. Eine Wahnsinnsgeschichte, als die Idee aufkam, als der John zum ersten Mal rumlief mit der Idee von Peloton, da wollte keiner investieren. Er hat mir erzählt, dass über 1000 Investoren ihm abgesagt hätten. Ich weiß gar nicht, wie man das 1000 Investoren überhaupt zeigen kann, aber er hat es erzählt und am Ende hat es doch geklappt. Jetzt ist es wahrscheinlich eine der erfolgreichsten Digital-Stories weltweit der letzten Jahre, muss man sagen. Krasse Geschichte, wie es gekommen ist, was er noch vorhat, wo er sich sieht, wie groß das deutsche Business ist und noch werden soll. All das kommt jetzt, beziehungsweise noch kurz vorab der Hinweis, dass nach dem Gespräch mit dem John ein paar Sprachnachrichten von Lea Kramer kommen, in denen sie mir erklärt, welche Trades sie gemacht hat im Rahmen unseres Börsenspiels hier mit den Stammgästen. Aber jetzt erstmal rein ins Gespräch mit John Foley. Welcome to the OMR podcast. Welcome, John Foley. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. There's so much talk in the German digital circles and the industry about Peloton. Maybe just a brief background on how you came up with this whole thing and how much of the product was thought up by you in the very early beginnings and how much basically happened on the fly.
Yeah, the founding team and I had the vision pretty clearly from the earliest days that we wanted to create a technology platform that would allow you to take instructor-led group fitness classes from home, because the energy and the instruction and the community is so motivating and so fun versus working out in the home of yesteryear where it was very boring and monotonous and it was just a hardware platform. So we decided to make a hardware, software, and content ecosystem that would bring all of the fun, engaging, entertaining media into the experience in your home.
And where did you have the idea from? I mean, was it out of your own necessity that you thought that was missing, or did you see it similar somewhere else, or what was inspiring you?
Yeah, interestingly, I was the president of a company here in the States called Barnes & Noble, which is a book retailer. And what we were seeing is in book retailing, the traditional bookstore was being disrupted with these new platforms, the Kindle and the Nook. I don't know what the brand name would be in Germany, but these hardware and software platforms in your hand that allow you to read a book. Mm-hmm. Without going to the bookstore. Mm-hmm. And so I was working at Barnes & Noble, and I went to a fitness class, an indoor cycling class, and I said, I think you can build a hardware and software platform for consuming this content at home with cameras and audio and the music, and then with gamified software where it felt like other people were with you or you could see the other people that were sharing the experience. So I had the context of what was happening in the book media disruption world, and we effectively brought it into the fitness world.
But in the beginning, no investor would believe in this concept, right? I mean, there's this legend that you got turned down by a couple hundred investors and nobody wanted to invest into your idea.
Yeah, for sure. It was 400 institutional investors and then thousands of angel investors that turned me down. For the first 3 years, we raised $10 million from 100 angel investors. But in order to get 100 angel investors to invest in the face of no institutional money wanting to invest, we had to pitch thousands and thousands of people. But yeah, they struggled because they would say, what is the market for a $2,000 stationary bike? And at the time, there wasn't a market for a $2,000 stationary bike. But I was trying to explain to them, it's not a piece of hardware. Nobody wants a $2,000 stationary bike in their home. What people want is a fantastic workout experience that's highly effective, highly motivating, highly convenient, and a great, great location at a great value. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't a good enough storyteller trying to connect the dots because my success rate was pretty bad.
But I mean, you got money from Kickstarter in the beginning, right? From the platform.
Yeah, we got a tiny bit of Kickstarter money. It was a couple hundred thousand dollars, but in the face of what we needed, a couple hundred million dollars, as it turned out, to build Peloton. So it was, less than 1%. I would say the Kickstarter launch was a failure because we were expecting to sell, thousands or tens of thousands of bikes on the platform, and we sold a couple hundred.
Who was the first person, the first institution that actually believed in this idea in the early days that really helped you break through?
Yeah, the biggest moment from a fundraising perspective was when I met with a guy named Leif Excel at Tiger Global. He's now off on his own at a company called Addition that he just founded. But Leif Excel was a very special visionary investor who saw us late in the Series B and shared the vision. And he and I appreciated each other. And he really changed the trajectory of Peloton. He was the first big institutional investor to really see what we were building.
And were you always envisioning a media company? I mean, today you claim that Peloton basically is a media company.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the special sauce in what we're building is, between the software and the content, the media, that's kind of the difference that we're bringing into the fitness equipment category. Fitness equipment of yesteryear was just hardware. And that really wasn't what the consumers wanted. They want the software and they want the media. They want the great instructor and through the software platform, they want to see and interact with the other people in the community that are supporting them and motivating them. And so it really is a tech platform and a media company for sure.
So would you say that like more than half of the success is because of the media aspect, or like how is the balance between the hardware product and the content?
Yeah, I mean, you've heard this in other categories where I think Rupert Murdoch originally said it, that content is king, and it's no exception in the fitness category. Our content is what is special. It's what people are buying, and it's what they're paying for month after month through the subscription, is access to the content and the instructors and the community. Obviously, the software enables all of the media to be consumed in an integrated way, but it really is the content that makes the whole experience special.
Okay. How did you like advertise for the product? I mean, in the end, the user can only experience the content once he has a bike or once he has a subscription, at least. How did you like, where did you find the first users? Once you had the first bike and once you had the content ready, where did you like, where did you put it in order to attract people?
Well, yeah, we built this fantastic platform that was the Peloton bike, and we put it for sale on our website, and it was effectively crickets, meaning no one came to the site and no one bought the bike. So we had to get creative to your question, and we went out to a mall in New Jersey called the Short Hills Mall, and we hung a shingle effectively and put a sign up that said Peloton store, and put a couple bikes on the showroom floor. And it was November 1st when we opened the store, and we had it for a couple months through February. And that happened to be the best time to sell fitness equipment, which is going into the holiday season. And then in January, in the States, there's something called New Year's resolutions. I'm guessing there's a similar dynamic.
Similar
dynamic in Germany, where so January and February are great months to sell fitness equipment. And it was through that store that we realized that people in the early days really needed to touch and feel the experience. And interesting to your users listeners is it's one of the reasons why when we went to Germany, we decided to go heavy with stores, because we knew that the German consumers who hadn't yet experienced the Peloton platforms would want to touch and feel it, just as we saw here in the States.
Mm-hmm. So basically it's about the stores. Then, I mean, the early adopters came through the stores.
That's right.
And then after that, I mean, obviously now you have like over a million subscribers. You haven't won them over in stores exclusively. You've won them online mostly, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's now that people understand what we're doing and why this bike is special, and why the treadmill is special, and why the content and the community are different. We sell the vast majority of our bikes and treads now online, and people don't have to go to the store. You're exactly right. There's something I'm sure you're familiar with called word of mouth.
Yeah.
Which is also, there's a term, net promoter score, where it's a business metric that keeps track of how much your members want to recommend your products to their friends. And when you have people who are very passionate about their Peloton bike or the Peloton tread, they tell their friends, they tell their family, and that really helps you get comfortable with buying it without having to go to the store and checking it out.
I mean, are you also like using some kind of referral mechanic where you know, somebody that buys it and refers it gets a discount or something?
Yeah, it's funny. We've played with that. We do have a referral credit where you, if you refer a friend, you get a $100 gift card for our apparel boutique, where you can buy clothing at the Peloton apparel store. But I wouldn't say it's a screaming success. It's something that we've played with, and it seems like having a referral credit would be very powerful. To some people, it's motivating, but mostly people just want to tell their friends about Peloton and how much they love it. And I think they generally do it without the motivation of the $100 gift credit.
In Germany, like at least in marketing circles, Peloton also became famous for some, you know, for some ads that are targeted to very, I would say affluent potential buyers, and those ads that were like the bike in like the most expensive kind of looking lofts and like panorama views across rivers and bridges, and then I was in a living room with a Peloton bike. Was that made by design, like those ads that are actually really like making this product look very upscale?
Yeah, it was by design, and it was probably a ham-handed bad decision on my own part, to be honest. When we first started going to television with our commercials and trying to tell the story, I thought to myself, you know, marketers need to sell aspiration, and you want to see it in a house that you would like and see it with a family or a wife or a husband that you would like to be married to, and with cute kids and the whole, you know, dream. But yeah, I think in the early days we swung too far with that, where we did get a little flack for it feeling a little too high end, which it's not. And at this point, the majority of our bikes and treads are sold to households making a lot less than $200,000 or even $150,000U.S. GDP or U.S. Dollars. But you're right. We did err on the side of affluence, because we thought it was the way that you were supposed to do it with marketing. And we've learned a lot over the last 5 or 6 years on how to approach our customers.
Are most of the customers buying the product all cash, or is that like financing plans or anything? What's the usual way to buy it?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's another thing that we figured out a few years ago, is that financing really has changed the optics on affordability for our products. There's not many people that have $2,000 sitting in their, or euro for that matter, sitting in their checking account, you know, ready to be spent. Vast majority of people would prefer to do it to pay on a monthly basis. So at this point, the majority of our bikes and treads are financed. In the States, it's now $49 a month for a Peloton bike. And we have a financing partner here in the States called Affirm. And over there in Germany and the UK, it's a partner called Klarna, you've probably heard of.
Klarna. And so it's the same in Germany. I would assume like there's much more people here that actually buy it like all cash. That's just traditionally the way Germans buy stuff, is all cash up front.
I do not know the specifics of our financing penetration in Germany. I apologize. It's close to 60% in the States. To your point, it might be lower in Germany. I apologize.
Do you have like someone that is similar to an editor in chief? I mean, if we're talking about a media company in a way, do you have an editorial team that's, you know, running the content on Peloton?
Absolutely. We have a chief content officer, Jen Cotter, who is a media executive, a media visionary, to your point. And she has a team of probably 150, maybe 200 people, including the instructors, that create the media and run the studios. We call it Peloton Studios New York and Peloton Studios London. As you may know, the German content, Irene and Eric Schultz, Eric Jaeger and Irene Schultz, stream out of our London studio, which we opened because when we went to the UK and when we went to Germany, we wanted to make sure not only would we hire German nationals and British nationals, but we would be over in the same time zone. So when you take a 7 o'clock ride in Frankfurt, that class is streaming at 6 o'clock in the morning live from the UK. So we take advantage of the time zone over there in Europe.
What role did influencers play? I mean, if you research a little bit around Peloton, there's a lot of famous people with a lot of reach on Instagram, for instance, that associate themselves with Peloton. Sometimes it seems that's all because they enjoy the product. Sometimes it might be because there's some kind of, you know, business deal, commercial corporation behind it. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, in almost no circumstances, none that come to mind, is there a paid relationship when somebody posts, except for the relationship we just announced this morning with Beyonce, which was a big deal and a very unique situation to get Beyonce's music on our platform and to partner with her in all sorts of ways. But to your question, almost exclusively when somebody posts that they love Peloton, it's because they love Peloton. But you're right that there is an interesting dynamic that we saw in the early days, that if you're a named celebrity, if you're kind of a big deal in your country, you disproportionately want a Peloton bike or a Peloton tread, because going to the gym is a different experience to you. If you go to the gym, if you're a recognized face, a politician or a celebrity or a musician or a sports star, you might get accosted, or you might get the paparazzi follow you. And in order to get a great workout without having to deal with that, we found that those people migrate very quickly to the Peloton experience and the Peloton value proposition, which one of them is privacy and getting to work out without having to travel.
Ah, okay. Okay. And any German influencers or any German celebrities already like on the platform?
I don't know. That's a better question for you.
I mean, I know some from the digital space that are using it, but I don't know if they have that, you know, the relevant reach. Maybe a few words on the model. I mean, you have different subscription models, and then you obviously have the hardware product. Right now, almost 80% of the revenue is coming from the hardware, right?
That's right. It's an unfortunate reality that we're growing so fast, growing over 100% year on year. So with that type of growth, the top line, we're selling so many bikes and so many treads, the top line is dominated by hardware revenue, even though the subscription revenue line is growing equally, if not more fast. But you're right, we make money on the hardware, enough money on the hardware to pay for our cost of acquisition, which is very unique, which means our subscription model, when it kicks in, is the full margin drops to our bottom line right away, which is a beautiful part of our business model.
Okay, and then you have two types of subscriptions. The one is for everybody that can actually use Peloton with its tablet or with its cell phone, and then the other one is with a subscription built into the bike, right?
That's right. So we call the digital app business, which is the first one you described, which is you could download on an iOS device or an Android device or any one of your televisions in your home via the OTT platforms like Roku or Apple TV or Amazon Fire TV. And all of those platforms, you can download the Peloton app and start streaming Peloton content, whether it's strength classes or yoga classes or now bar classes. And of course, our core cycling and running classes can be on any screen. So you don't need to buy a Peloton bike or a Peloton tread to jump into our classes tomorrow morning. If you have a cycling, a stationary bike at home and or a treadmill at home, you can download our app on any one of these devices in your hand or in your home and start taking our classes without buying our hardware. That's exactly right.
Perfekt aufgestellt sein für den Digitalisierungsprozess. Wer will das nicht? Ein erster Schritt jedenfalls könnte es sein, Kunde zu werden bei Vodafone, insbesondere im Businessbereich. Dann kann man nämlich das Vodafone-eigene Kabel-Glasfasernetz mitnutzen, hat dann da bis zu 1000 Mbit und einen sehr günstigen Tarif, monatlich 34,90 Euro. Das gibt es gerade als Angebot, statt 49,90 Euro. Man spart also im Jahr bis zu 360 Euro, wenn man jetzt sozusagen das Angebot wahrnimmt. Der ganze Tarif bei Vodafone heißt Red Business Internet and Phone Tarif. Und wie gesagt, mit bis zu 1000 Mbit. Alle Infos vodafone.de/businesscable. Is Apple becoming a competitor to what you do?
That's a good question. I would not say that they're going to be a direct competitor. They did announce they're going to stream some fitness classes. But it's such a tiny part of what we do is just streaming fitness classes to an iPad. Obviously, we have a iOS app experience on the iPad already. So on that one platform, we will compete. But the vast majority, 95%+ of what we focus on and what we do is the vertically integrated experiences where we sell you a bike or we sell you a tread. And through that integrated experience with the hardware and the software and the media and the community, it's such a powerful experience that nothing that Apple has announced is going to come close on that front.
I mean, besides the Beyoncé deal that you announced apparently yesterday, was yesterday a bad day for you since there came the news of the vaccine?
Well, it was a bad day for the stock, but I think it was a good day for me personally and for all of the people at Peloton. We are social. We are excited to get back to work together. We can't wait to hug our community and take rides in person with our community and get back into our headquarters and in London and in Berlin and in New York City and be together. And obviously, you know, it's a massive deal for the world, the vaccine announcement, and we're super excited. We are going to build a company, a great company, based on a value proposition of better workouts at a better location with better instructors on better hardware with a better value. And that story and that value proposition existed in COVID, and it's going to exist when COVID's done.
I mean, COVID helped you quite a bit. I mean, if you look at the numbers, the company almost tripled during the pandemic, right?
That's right. In our recent quarter, our top line did triple. And there's no question COVID has accelerated the inevitable, which is fitness is moving into the home. There was an interesting study here in the States, CNBC put out that they found that based on a survey that 59% of Americans are not going to go back to the gym after COVID.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's just it's a massive change of how people are living their lives and how their value prop is. They've discovered and they continue to discover Peloton, the bike and the tread and the new bike and the new tread, that you can have better experiences at home. It's here to stay.
When did the tipping point happen? I mean, it obviously happened already before COVID, but how did you notice, or what happened when basically there was this breakthrough and you could almost feel, I mean, you must have felt it that now I'm almost all of a sudden running a household name brand. What was like triggering this, or how did it feel like? When was the moment when the product and the whole company was at the turning point?
You're right to point it out. It does feel like we've become a pretty big brand. We're still not a big company vis-a-vis where we see ourselves going. I mean, if you think about, we have, you know, 1.3 million subscribers. We see a world very soon with tens of millions of subscribers. So we're in the infancy of our business still, but you're right that the brand is becoming, at least pretty well known in the markets we operate. So thank you for noticing. And it did happen in the last 6 months, I would say, with people staying at home. Since we've gone public, we're getting more attention on the news networks, of course, because they're interested in our stock performance. But the last year, it does feel like we're kind of more on the world stage in a way that we're ready. We've been playing for this moment for 8 or 9 years, and our team is ready. And so it's fun. It's fun to be recognized, and it's fun to be helpful to our members' lives, because especially in the COVID world where people couldn't get to the gym, we were providing a real service to all of our members.
Where's the bike manufactured? Is it in Asia or is it in the U.S.?
Right now, we're experimenting with some stateside assembly to help complement the majority of our manufacturing and supply chain, which is in Asia, most of it in Taiwan, but some coming from other places in Asia.
And like in the early beginnings, were you the one that like designed the whole thing? Were you like the one that's sitting there saying, look, it has to look like this, it has to be like that? Or was there some kind of product architect that just showed you suggestions?
Yeah, so my co-founder, Tom Cortese, is the design visionary of the founding, the five of us, Hisao, Graham, Yoni, and Tom. Tom's design sensibility is way beyond mine. So he was leading the aesthetic design of the bike in the early days, especially when I was out trying to fundraise. He was working with contract manufacturers in Taiwan to bring the bike aesthetic to life.
Okay. And is there any what gives you the feeling of how much space there is still ahead of you? I mean, you just mentioned there's, you know, millions of potential new subscribers or users. What's your way to predict that? What number do you look at?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm glad you asked. There are close to 200 million people globally that have gym memberships. And it is my thesis, it is our thesis, that you don't want a gym membership. You are paying money because you want to be fit and you want to have fantastic fitness experiences in your week. But if those experiences could be at a better location and at a better value, and if they were more fun and more effective and more motivating and more entertaining, you would cancel your gym membership and sign up for the better option. Mm-hmm. So I think that every one of those people that are paying hard money month after month to access inferior fitness equipment at an inferior location, I think those folks want Peloton platforms in their home.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else that distributes or sells Peloton besides you directly?
There is not. We are, as you know, the term direct to consumer. So yeah. we are doing all of our retail and sales on our website. And you have to, or you could call in and talk to one of our sales reps on the phone. But we are direct to consumer exclusively at this point.
And there was never like thought of doing it differently, like putting it on Amazon or putting it into an Apple store or something like that?
No, I mean, of course, we've thought about it. We're commercial and we're thoughtful, so we're always trying to sharpen our pencil on our strategy. But we like the direct to consumer model at this point. It's serving us well.
And I mean, basically, like with the business model you just described, like with all the margin on the subscription, you must have really high customer acquisition costs that you can accept, right? I mean, you don't have to like stop at $30 or $40 dollars per new customer. Basically, you can spend like a couple of hundred probably for a new customer, right?
Closer to 1,000, absolutely. You're exactly right. With the margin we have in our hardware, we've said this publicly that we can spend up to $1,000 or in that range, and still be profitable or break even on the first transaction.
And is your marketing mostly performance marketing, so sales oriented marketing, or is it the brand itself?
It's a good question. We were, I would say, assassins in performance marketing in the early days because we had to be. As our brand gets bigger and as we're no longer having to educate people on what Peloton is, I mean, in Germany, I would say we're still doing mostly performance marketing with a bent towards performance and the cost of acquisition. But in the States, we're now evolving into some of the stuff that you allude to, which is more traditional brand marketing, because we don't have to be so linear on here is exactly what a Peloton bike is and what it does and here's why you want it and here's how it works. In the early days of a market, and I would say we're a year or two away from brand marketing in Germany, although I hope it's faster. And thanks to being on your podcast, maybe the word will get out even faster. But we're having fun as we transition into more brand marketing in the States, because it's allows us to be more elevated, to be honest.
I would personally guess that probably there can be a couple hundred thousand bikes in the German market, right?
No, I would say several million for sure.
Several million. I mean, we are like a country of 80 million people, so several million. That would almost be like every 10th German then.
Sure, I think every fifth German. as you think about, I'll give you another fun stat, as you're thinking about the total addressable market, there are 35 million treadmills in basements in U.S. homes. I think there's 110 or 120 million households in the U.S. So almost every third home in the U.S. has a treadmill. Those are people who bought a treadmill that generally they don't use anymore because it's not fun, it's not motivating, and there's no programming, and it's not a good piece of equipment. But they did spend the money saying that I want fitness in my home. So when you think about the opportunity in Germany, if there's 70 million Germans, I'd have to double click and see how many households. I would guess it's probably
40 million something. Yeah,
40 million households. I could see every other household having a Peloton bike or a Peloton tread for sure.
Whoa, okay. Whoa. But how come, I mean, if you go like mass market, how come the latest product that you've launched, they seem to be even more like upscale or more expensive, the Bike Plus and all this? It seems like you're not turning towards mass market, but rather the opposite.
Well, I would have an asterisk. You're right. The Bike Plus is more expensive and it's an incredible platform and we're proud to bring it to market. And it's selling beyond our highest expectations because people are excited about, you know, all the new features and all the new content and the new experience. But to your question, a part of bringing it to market was lowering the price of our current bike, which was a really important part of the strategy. And in the coming years, continuing to find ways to lower the price of entry, whether it's through financing, to your point, with a monthly payment or otherwise maybe a leasing product down the road where it could be even cheaper on a monthly basis. We are focused on lowering or increasing the affordability so that the idea of getting into half of the German households is more than a dream.
Can you imagine like inventing a next product? I mean, here in Germany, there's a lot of talk in fitness circles around like the fitness mirror. There's like a German product, Vaha. I know there's the mirror product in the US. What's your perspective on that?
I'm not sure there's a product market fit for that type of experience. Our content that we stream bar classes and strength classes, like we talked about, to your television that is in your, if you're from the mirror product that was bought by Lululemon is not a touch screen. So you think about it, it's just being a screen in your room or in your home gym or your basement. Well, you already have a screen in your home gym or your bedroom or your living room or your basement. It's called your television screen. And so with all of these different platforms where you can download the Peloton app without having to spend a couple thousand dollars for a new screen in that room, we like our chances of bringing our members and eventually other members into the experience on the back of content that takes advantage of hardware that's already in your home.
Okay, so the hardware is essential to the model, right? I mean, in the end, it seems like it's also that essential that to sell like expensive hardware, because if you like stop selling this hardware, then your revenue is going to go down. I mean, the profitability might go even up, but the revenue is going down. Are you afraid of the moment when that like the hardware sales go down and you have to rely on the subscriptions? Because then at least you're gonna at the latest you're gonna lose revenue, right?
Yeah, I was only responding to the mirror opportunity where it's floor workouts, whether it's yoga or strength or bar or workouts where you don't need hardware. We will always have bikes and treads. We'll always make the best bikes and treads in the world. And in order to run at home, you need a treadmill. And in order to bike at home, you need a stationary bike. And we plan to build and sell tens of millions of them to all kinds of markets because you need them in order to get an indoor cycling or a at-home running experience. So hardware will always be a part of our business for sure.
Okay, I mean, and is it a fair perspective to say that you need it? I mean, otherwise numbers are going to drop, right? I mean, if you stop selling hardware, then the revenue is going to go down.
Yeah, I mean, we're not gaming our business model for the markets. We would do whatever would made sense for our members. To get them fantastic workout experiences in their home. But right now, I don't see a world where that doesn't include the best stationary bike and the best treadmill in the world.
And any other products like on the horizon? I mean, I know there's clothing and all those smaller things, but any other products on the horizon?
We have a very robust research and development team and budget, and we are investing in all sorts of different research and innovation around our software, around our content, and around our hardware. So in the coming years, you'll see some cool stuff coming out of Peloton for sure.
How do you explain like that? Your churn? I mean, like if I look at your numbers, the one thing I find fascinating is you have almost like less churn than a telco company, and you have month-to-month contracts. I mean, people can like leave like at the end of a month, but still there's like I think less than 1% of your customers churns. How is that possible?
Yeah, so if you think about we just announced earnings a couple days ago and we talked about our Q1 usage per subscription, and our members are using their subscription over 20 times per month. So when you think about here in the States, you're paying $39 per month and you're using it 20 times a month, it's less than $2 per workout on average. So when you're options are going to a boutique fitness class where you charged $30 here in New York City per class, whether it's yoga or boot camp or cycling. And at the Peloton platform, you and your family are working out and the average price is $2 per workout. The value proposition is just so strong that that you would never consider churning because you love the experience, you love the location, you love the instructors, you love the community, and you love the value. So that's why the subscription is so sticky, because it's working for our members.
And I mean, obviously you trust in the product, so that's why you offer like the month-to-month subscription, right? I mean, you must be trusting, otherwise you'd be like trying to keep the customer longer locked in.
100%. And it's funny, with gyms, it's often very hard to get out of your gym membership, which is obviously super not very pro-consumer, pro-member. Yeah, you're absolutely right. If you don't want to pay for your subscription, you can cancel very easily a Peloton, and still we don't see it happening, because people want to consume the content and keep their membership.
I mean, if I look at like all the D2C brands that came up in the past years, most of them didn't really work out that well, at least not commercially. I mean, some of them got bought, but you know, you had nice exits, but not like you, like IPO and then actually like a profitable business. What differentiates you? Is it only the content? Is it the price point? Is it the basket size, basically? What do you think, you know, sets you apart from all these other D2C companies that try to break through and it never really happened?
I love that you're a student of this stuff, because so am I. So it's a fun interview for me. Interestingly, Netflix is a direct-to-consumer business, and they're doing very well. Spotify is a direct-to-consumer business, effectively, and they're doing very well. So obviously, our hardware sets us apart, and I think that's kind of what you were asking. But there are these new world media companies that bring you fantastic content where you are. Is kind of more analogous to what Peloton is building, I believe.
So you'd rather compare your business to Netflix than to maybe, I don't know, let's say the Million Dollar Shave Club or whatever. Like, is there a D2C couple of the Caspers of this world? I mean, they're also D2C. Obviously, they produce other stuff, but so does Netflix, right? So you're like, would rather be put into a media peer group than the D2C peer group?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what you're paying, you pay Netflix every month to get access to their content. You pay Spotify every month to get access to their content, and you pay Peloton every month to get access to our content. Our churn, I believe, is lower than both of those companies because of the hardware element, where you bought in, and once you get the hardware, the bike or the tread, you're not leaving because you're so happy with the experience. And so you're kind of locked in via the hardware. But yeah, we would consider ourselves much more like Spotify and Netflix than say a Casper, to your point. Mm.
And what are your next markets? I mean, we talked about the US, we talked about Germany a little bit. Is there any other like major markets coming? Is Asia big for you?
We are excited to be a global technology platform, bringing fitness into the homes of tens of millions of people around the world. So yes, we are going to enter new markets in the coming years. We're not able to announce them today, but I do love the idea of Peloton being in several languages and in a lot more countries in the coming years. So we're just trying to manage how quickly we can get to these countries, understanding that our core business and our core markets is still growing over 100% year on year. So we just don't want to get over our skis with too many countries too quickly.
John, how often do you use Peloton yourself?
I bet I'm 2 to 3 times a week. I still run outside on the West Side Highway probably once a week. But my wife is a 7-time-a-week Peloton tread or bike rider. So she probably works out twice as much on Peloton as I do. But it's all on the same subscription. So both of she and I are getting a lot of use out of our $39 membership.
And who's your instructor?
I rotate pretty evenly across all of the different instructors, including Eric Jaeger, who did a really cool Oktoberfest ride last month. If you haven't taken it, he's in his Lederhosen. And okay. it is a real he speaks a little English, which helped me because I don't speak German, but I did have it translated. But he's a real ray of light that I think the German members are really proud of, like Irene, who is also fantastic. So I'm trying to rotate through all our different instructors.
Any VIP Peloton user that you're especially proud of?
Well, I will tell you that it is public and Joe Biden talks about...
Wow.
Yeah, that he rides his Peloton every morning. And so when he got elected to be the next president of the United States, it's fun to think about a Peloton in the White House.
Okay, well, okay, you can't top that. Thank you very much, John, for talking to us.
You're the best. Thank you for having me, and hi to all your members.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Das war das Gespräch mit dem John. Und jetzt, wie versprochen, die Sprachnachrichten von Lea Kramer, in denen sie mir erklärt, welche Trades sie gemacht hat zu Beginn unseres Börsenspiels. Wir haben das ja vor ein paar Wochen hier angefangen und Sven und Tarek haben mir auch schon hier im Podcast erklärt, warum sie welche Firmen gekauft haben. Wer das nachvollziehen möchte, unter omr.com gibt es den Reiter Börsenspiel, da kann man das auch alles nochmal nachlesen und sich die Kurse in Echtzeit anschauen. Jedenfalls jetzt kommen die Ideen und Gedanken von Lea.
Die Finance Corner. Risikohinweis. Die Inhalte dienen ausschließlich der allgemeinen Information und sind zum einen ohne Gewähr und zum anderen keine Empfehlung zum Kauf oder Verkauf bestimmter Finanzinstrumente. Es handelt sich hier nicht um Anlageberatung. Ihr entscheidet selber, was ihr macht.
Hello Philipp. Genau, Lea hier aus dem Urlaub. Ja, ich habe jetzt schon gesehen, dass ihr gestartet seid. Ich hätte ehrlicherweise damit gerechnet, dass Sven viel ausgefallenere Aktien kauft und auch wesentlich mehr, dass Tarek auch gleich loslegt und du hältst auch noch 5.000 Euro in Cash, glaube ich, ne? Also ihr seid jetzt gar nicht so reingestartet, wie ich das erwartet hatte. Das werde ich jetzt machen. ich bin ja noch so ein Investment-Küken. Tarek sagt ja, er ist irgendwie Rookie. Ich weiß nicht, was das dann für dich und Sven heißt. Sven ist dann irgendwie schon mal in der Startelf angekommen oder so. Der weiß schon, wo wir spielen, was wir spielen und wie das Spiel geht. Und Tarek und ich lernen on the way. Ja, ehrlicherweise so von den generellen Investment-Hypothesen ist es bei mir so, dass ich gerade versuche, mich aufzuschlauen. Ich lese jetzt dieses Buch, Little Book of Common Sense Investing, von dem John Bogle, diesem Jack Bogle heißt er irgendwie im Sprachgebrauch, Gründer von Vanguard und hat einen ersten Indexfonds gebaut. Und Warren Buffett ist ein Riesenfan von ihm. Dann hatte ich Money Mart angefangen zu lesen von Tony Robbins. Long story short, da kommt eigentlich raus, dass man in Indexfonds investieren soll, ja, weil alles andere macht keinen Sinn. Man ist nicht schlauer als der Markt. Und wenn man, wie ich, langfristig investieren will, versteht, dass im Investing-Bereich man gucken muss, dass die Kosten niedrig bleiben. Das tut man halt nicht, wenn man irgendeinen Vermögensberater hat oder ganz viel tradet. Und kein Geld verlieren will, das heißt eigentlich an eine Streuung glaubt und eine Diversifikation, dann macht es eigentlich Sinn, glaube ich, in Indexfonds zu investieren. Und das wäre aber jetzt, glaube ich, langweilig für so ein Börsenspiel. Deswegen habe ich mich jetzt entschieden, dass ich mir quasi meinen kleinen Lea-Index baue, meinen kleinen eigenen Index. Und ich mache ja immer so, ich halte ja immer so Reden, so 7 Learnings of this und 7 Learnings of that. Und irgendwie, ich finde, 7 ist so eine Glückszahl. Deswegen habe ich mich jetzt für 7 Aktien entschieden und werde wahrscheinlich damit weniger Rendite erzielen, als ihr, die weniger Aktien nehmen und mehr Risiko drin habt, aber hoffentlich eine höhere Chance haben, kein Geld zu verlieren. Und mir geht es ja jetzt vor allen Dingen erstmal darum, zu lernen, kein Geld zu verlieren und irgendwie mitzumachen und Spaß zu haben. Deswegen 7 Aktien, it's gonna be. Okay, welche 7 Aktien? Also, ich investiere erstmal in Tech, wegen, ich glaube an Tech, ich liebe Tech. Und ich glaube, mit Corona macht das noch mehr Sinn. Ich will in E-Commerce investieren, wegen meiner Historie im E-Commerce, wegen Weihnachtszeit, die vor uns steht und nochmal dem Lockdown. Ich glaube, E-Commerce wird überproportional nochmal profitieren. Ich bin nicht so wie Tarek, dass ich so krass an Timing glaube oder beziehungsweise ich traue mir nicht zu, das richtige Timing abzupassen. Ich habe auch keine Ahnung, wie sich die Märkte entwickeln werden. Deswegen will ich lieber so Stockpicking machen und in Firmen investieren, an die ich langfristig glaube, weil ich an die Megatrends und die Dynamiken generell des Marktes glaube. Das heißt, ich will Klimawende irgendwie mit drin haben. Ich will diesen Homeoffice-Teil mit drin haben. Ich will, weil es mir wichtig ist und weil ich daran glaube, diesen Female-Shift drin haben an Frauen, die in den Management-Teams sitzen. Und ich will über verschiedene Kontinente streuen. Einfach auch wegen Diversifizierung generell und auch, weil ich nicht weiß, wie, wo sich Corona irgendwie ausbreitet und wie welche Regierungen da drauf reagieren und so weiter. Deswegen will ich echt gut streuen. So, welche Aktien jetzt generell oder spezifisch nicht generell? Ich will E-Commerce machen, habe ich ja gesagt, aber ich kann kein Amazon machen, weil Sven das schon hat. Deswegen habe ich mir jetzt zwei ausgesucht. Das eine ist Mercado Libre aus Argentinien. Das ist quasi das eBay Lateinamerikas mit einer Monopolstellung. Die haben auch so ein Mercado Pago. Ich kann kein Spanisch. was so ein bisschen ist wie ein PayPal. Die Aktie hatte irgendwie in den letzten sechs Monaten 95% plus, Amazon nur 26, ist auch schon 54 Milliarden wert, das Unternehmen. Das heißt, an die glaube ich, das finde ich spannend. Dann möchte ich gerne noch Shopify machen, auch weil ich kein Amazon machen kann. Das ist ja quasi ja das System für alle die kleineren Merchants und kleineren Händler, die online verkaufen, auch über 50% in den letzten 6 Monaten gewachsen, die Aktie. Das heißt, da glaube ich dran. Dann will ich den Enabler davon machen, also Payment. Da habe ich überlegt, PayPal, klar, Wirecard ist tot, geht nicht mehr. Klarna ist leider noch nicht an der Börse. Das ist, glaube ich, jetzt das wertvollste Fintech in Europa. Die letzte Finanzierungsrunde waren irgendwie 650 Millionen Euro, die sie eingesammelt haben. Also crazy, wäre mega, aber geht nicht. Und dann habe ich gedacht, mache ich Adyen oder Adyen, wie man sie spricht, weiß ich nicht, aus Holland. Weil dann habe ich so ein bisschen noch Europa drin und sind auch gut gewachsen in den letzten Monaten, die Aktie. Dann will ich auf jeden Fall Klimawende machen und ich wollte noch irgendwie so einen Asien-Fokus drin haben. Da kenne ich mich aber nicht gut aus. Deswegen habe ich einen Freund von mir gefragt, wie so sein Asien-Portfolio läuft und der meinte, die beste Aktie darin ist Xingyi Solar Holding. Und die habe ich mir jetzt mal angeguckt aus Taiwan. Die stellen und verkaufen Solarglas her und verticken es halt. Und das braucht man ja für Solarpaneele. Ich glaube, wenn wir jetzt alle Richtung Green Energy gehen und selbst der chinesische Präsident der UN gesagt hat, dass die bei 2060 CO2-neutral sein wollen in China und vielleicht ja Joe Biden der Präsident der USA wird. Das heißt, der wird ja dann auch sozusagen wieder die Klimawende ernst nehmen. Dann glaube ich, sind die in einer guten Stellung, auch in den letzten 6 Monaten 150% gewachsen, die Aktie. Das heißt, kenne ich überhaupt nicht und so, aber habe ich mir angeguckt, finde ich jetzt cool. Dann wollte ich diesen Teil New Work und Home Office drin haben. Da habe ich also überlegt, Zoom zu machen oder ServiceNow und habe mich jetzt für DocuSign entschieden. Das ist ja einfach quasi, da ist ein ganzes Vertragsmanagement online. Das heißt, meine ganzen Verträge unterzeichne ich nur noch über DocuSign und es erspart mir so viel lästige Arbeit. Und die habe ich versus Zoom und ServiceNow genommen, weil die einen höheren Prozentanteil Frauen in ihrem Führungsteam haben. Die haben 37%, Zoom hat 23%, ServiceNow hat 27%. Das heißt, die haben mehr Frauen. Deswegen glaube ich, haben sie bessere oder werden sie bessere Entscheidungen treffen, weil diverse Teams, wie wir ja wissen, 20% mehr Umsatz holen. Juhu! Und damit kommen wir schon zu den letzten beiden. Auch Female Empowerment will ich ein Hardware Company reinnehmen, und zwar AMD. Das ist ja der Hauptwettbewerber von Intel und vertreibt so Computerchips, Mikroprozessoren und so weiter. Und genau, die haben eine weibliche CEO schon seit 2014, Lisa Su. Die war 2019 übrigens die erste Frau als bestbezahlteste CEO der USA. Irre. Und die hat gerade ihren Wettbewerber gekauft. Und hat dieses Unternehmen krass umgekrempelt, ist 2014 da rein, da waren die irgendwie total defizitär, hatten veraltete Prozessoren, hatten irgendwie überhaupt keinen Fuß in der Tür und hinkten richtig hinter Intel hinterher. Und jetzt sagen alle, dass Intel quasi einpacken kann und AMD führend ist. Die sind auch, seitdem sie im Amt ist, ums 8-fache gestiegen, die Aktie. Deswegen ich glaube an die Lisa und ich glaube an AMD. Und deswegen finde ich das nice. Und dann habe ich noch eine fürs Herz. Und aus Deutschland, Zalando. Ich will noch Zalando reinnehmen, weil coole Marke, Mode, Fashion und so, kenne ich überhaupt nicht aus, aber finde ich einfach schön, von außen irgendwie Teilhaber zu sein. Und ich kenne da so viele Leute, die da entweder arbeiten oder gearbeitet haben, die Gründer natürlich. Und es freut mich einfach, wenn die sich freuen. Ich finde es einfach geil, wenn die sich dann freuen und ich mich auch mit freuen kann. Und das finde ich großartig. Scheiße, jetzt denke ich die ganze Zeit, ich müsste noch West Wing kaufen. West Wing ist ja so durch die Decke gegangen in den letzten Monaten. Ich habe auch richtig krass dazu beigetragen als Top-Kunde, glaube ich. Kann Delia sich nochmal bedanken bei mir. Mist, aber dann habe ich keine 7 Aktien mehr. Dann müsste ich 8 nehmen. Vielleicht ist das mein erster Trade, Philipp. Vielleicht wird das mein erster Trade. Ich weiß es nicht. Jetzt brauche ich noch Westwing, denke ich gerade. Weil das ist auch so eine Company fürs Herz. Und auch mega geil. Und jetzt in der Weihnachtszeit, glaube ich, funktioniert das super und so. Also du merkst hier tiefgreifende Analysen von mir. Aber ich habe gesagt, ich bin ein Küken, was das angeht. Und ja, so denke ich auf jeden Fall darüber nach. Und deswegen wäre das super, wenn ihr das jetzt für mich kaufen könntet. Juhu, danke. Tschüss.
Zum Schluss noch der Hinweis auf ein Angebot der Hamburg Media School. Sozusagen das Rundum-Sorglos-Paket für alle Wissensdurstigen, die im Online-Marketing ganz weit vorne sein wollen. Da gibt es den Online-Marketing-Manager, einen Kurs, der euch die modernsten Inhalte serviert, Maßnahmen, Technologien, Hintergründe, alles das, was man zum Digital-Marketing wissen muss. hamburgmediaschool.com/Weiterbildung.
Dieser Podcast wird produziert von Podstars. By OMR.